Like I said, my original goal was to earn £200 a month just to kind of, you know, help me pay my bills. But I always hoped that something would happen. I always hoped that I would be able to kind of get out of that corporate world and actually just be a bit more dynamic in my job, in a sense, a bit more free. And like I said, my goal really now is that freedom. Now that I've had that taste of it, I would never want to go back to a job.
You're listening to Ecomonics, a Debutify podcast. Your resource for one-of-a-kind insights into the world of e-commerce and business in the modern age. This is Joseph. I'll be presenting a wealth of industry knowledge from interviews with successful business people and our own state-of-the-art research. Your time is valuable, so let's go. Chris Wayne has faced some significant challenges on his journey into e-commerce, but he has taken his problems head on. His goal is one I think we can all strive for: freedom. Like many of the minds we've talked to, he's willing to offer his expertise to like-minded people as a mentor. And as an expert dropshipper, we talked to him today about how he sailed past his modest goal of £200, his strategy for dropshipping, and how to handle criticism, as just a few examples. No time to waste. Let's hop to it. Chris Wayne, it's good to have you here. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
I agree, and I haven't even asked you a question yet. So my my approach to these interviews is to start with what brings you here today. So who are you? What do you do? And what is your role in the world of e-commerce?
So my name is Chris Wayne. I started dropshipping, well, officially probably started dropshipping just over 3 years ago. Launched my own general store e-commerce business that grew to over $700,000. Since then, I've launched other dropshipping businesses as well. And I'm also the founder of the Advanced Dropshipping Academy, where I teach other people how to build and launch their own online e-commerce businesses.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I wanted to make sure I asked you was about the dropshipping academy. You advertise it as a data-driven dropshipping method. So yeah. What can you tell us about it, and what should prospective students be keeping in mind if they apply?
I think the biggest mistake a lot of new people in dropshipping make is they jump onto AliExpress and they pick a random product. They just pick something they think looks interesting, that kind of looks cool, and they hope for the best, and they think they're going to make $1 million overnight. And it doesn't really work like that. I mean, you know, going back 4, 5, 6 years ago, you could probably fire out a cat necklace on a Facebook ad and make tens of thousands of dollars, you know. But markets mature over time, and I think now we're in a space in terms of dropshipping where the data and the validation of products you choose is very important. And that's kind of the strategy I focus on, is looking at the data to make sure that you're choosing a product that not only kind of has the highest potential for profit, but also has the highest potential for growth long term as well, kind of thing. And I think a lot of people make that mistake. They think this is some sort of get rich quick scheme. You know, they think dropshipping is a kind of a secret method of running a business, and it's not. At the end of the day, it's an e-commerce business. You're running an e-commerce business using a dropshipping fulfillment model, kind of thing. So, you know, picking the right products is paramount to making it work. You can advertise something as well as you want and be awesome at marketing and things like that and get loads of people to your store, but if nobody wants the product you're trying to sell, no one's going to buy it. So I focus on the data behind the products to make sure that they have a track record of sales, you know, there's demand for it in terms of Google trend searches and all that kind of data behind it, in order to really pick the right products to build a business around.
We're definitely going to get some more questions in regards to that. But there was something that stuck out to me from your introduction. So you've been doing this for 3 years. That's so it's like 2016, 2017 is when you got this started. And that's something that surprises me, especially with a lot of the people that I talk to, is that it's not like anybody here has been doing this for, at least so far, nobody that I've talked to has been doing this for like 15 years, 20 years. So it's still in, I guess, some of the early phases of it. And it's maturing, but it's not mature yet. What were some of the people around when you guys started? Like, what was the environment like when you got into it?
There weren't that many people doing it. I think when I started, I stumbled across YouTube recommended me a video about how some guy had made $250,000 selling paracord bracelets on his online store. And that just blew my mind at the time. And I was just like, how? How is this even possible? And then YouTube algorithm picked up the fact I was watching these videos, and it led me further down into like Oberlo and things like that. And that's kind of how it went. But there weren't that many YouTubers doing it at the time when I first stumbled across it. I actually looked into dropshipping about 12 years ago. I found an old email where I was looking, but it wasn't as it is now. It was very much take it from suppliers, you know, like in the UK, for example, and actually speak to them directly. And, you know, it wasn't none of this sort of Chinese AliExpress dropshipping using Oberlo as your connection and things like that. But yeah, I think back when I started, there was a few people knocking around. Some of them aren't even here anymore. They're not even in the space anymore. They've moved on to SaaS companies and all sorts of things like that. So, but you've seen a lot more people pop up. You know, it's becoming a lot more common to see people on YouTube and, you know, popping up with these, you know, dropshipping tips and tricks and things like this. And you never know how credible they actually are these days. You know, that's the problem with it. You don't know their background and what they've done. But yeah, back when I started, there wasn't a lot. I didn't have anyone really show me what to do, in a sense.
Right. And I'm just, I can't help but imagine that those videos you saw must have been in 480p at best. Like they didn't look so good. Yeah. Yeah, it amazes me too, just trying to get a grasp on legitimacy. Cause I can be pretty skeptical. And so I feel like I would have to see like transactions happening in real time before I can truly and fully believe somebody. If I were in the position of, you know, looking on YouTube videos and seeing it, because it's pretty easy to fake a lot of things.
Yeah,
somebody, not naming names, but somebody can like walk around in a Hollywood mansion and point to their Ferraris and say, "Yeah, I did all this in a month, and if you sign up for my course, you can too." And yeah, I don't know what to make of it. So like, did anything, I guess, was there anything that stuck out to you that made you think, oh, okay, well, that actually does look legit?
I think really when it comes down to the credibility of people, especially in kind of the social media age we're in now, it's very easy to fake things. I think credibility really comes down to being able to back up the claims that we've had. So there's actually been some people, again, not naming kind of any names, that I looked up to when I first started that have turned out to have not been legitimate. Which was shocking to me at the time, kind of thing. But I think, you know, people in the dropshipping space, you know, obviously Oberlo are a well-known kind of brand within the space. You know, Shopify own Oberlo. The credibility is with them, in a sense. Mm-hmm. And everybody that's been on Oberlo's YouTube channel, myself included, have been vetted by Shopify and Oberlo. They are connected to our stores, kind of thing. They see the transactions coming in and out, sort of thing. So they know what's been done. So I could say, you know, relatively confidently, anyone that's been on Oberlo's YouTube channel is legitimate, in a sense, because of the background checks they do on you. Anyone that hasn't, then the question mark, you know, is above their head, kind of thing. I'm not saying they are scammers. I'm not saying they're illegitimate or anything, but, you know, there are going to be people out there that are, and it's very, very difficult to see that, you know. I think mm-hmm. there's been a big dropshipper recently who has been sued for fraud.
Oh, wow.
For basically, he legitimately sold a lot of products. You know, he's selling a course and things, but he sold a lot of products. But I think there's like a class action lawsuit or something against, I don't know the details exactly, but he was selling something fraudulently in terms of, you know, saying it was made in the US and it wasn't made in the US and all this kind of stuff. So he's done the sales, but not legitimately. Yeah. So
right. Well, I mean, it's false pretenses, right? Because if somebody says it's made in the US and that's technically a selling point, well, if that's not the case, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I worked in retail, so there, I've seen a lot of different tactics. Like I've seen like, oh yeah, this is an international assembly, which is to say like the calf for the leather came from India and then everything else was made in China. Like, oh yeah, it's totally international. It's
yeah. So I think credibility, yeah, it's difficult to find, but you know, there are places out there in terms of Shopify and Oberlo that really do add credibility to people, kind of thing, because of the research they do.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to say, in fairness to my own experience with Debutify, one of the first things that happened was Ricky Hayes. He took me through his training course, And that helped me see the legitimacy of it right away, because it was all behind the scenes stuff. He wasn't trying to hide anything. And that was definitely a helpful route early on, just to make me realize, wow, this stuff, people can really succeed in this. People can really make a huge difference. And it's also great too, that as I interview person to person, I'm noticing, and mind you, this is you're interview number 6, so this might not be such a good point once I get to interview number 23, but everybody seems to be working together to contribute a puzzle piece into the bigger picture. And as you say, Shopify and Oberlo, they are somewhat of, I don't want to say gatekeeper, more like a safeguard or a vanguard of legitimacy. Everybody one way or another has a relationship with these companies. It's pretty difficult not to. And Debutify is no exception. It's a Shopify theme. Yeah. So our legitimacy is based off Shopify's legitimacy.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Shopify is great. There's so many e-commerce businesses built on Shopify. It's not just dropshippers. Dropshipping is a fulfillment model. You're still running an e-commerce business at the end of the day. People who say dropshipping is a scam, it's just wrong. It's a fulfillment model. It's been around for decades. It's an e-commerce business at the end of the day. To say dropshipping is a scam is to say e-commerce is a scam. So that's my opinion on it.
Right. And it's just it's a reductionist argument, because then, e-commerce is a scam. Well, then economics is a scam. Yeah. Then money is a scam. And then life is a scam. It's okay. That's... make sure you take that black pill with some water while you're at it. You don't want to choke on the black pill on the way down. There's one other thing that you get up to, but I'll just want to make sure that I didn't miss anything else. But you also do one-on-one calls with prospective entrepreneurs. Now, is that part of the dropshipping course? Is this a separate thing? Or somebody signs up for the dropshipping course and they can do the calls as well?
So the calls are really for people who kind of want to work with me personally, in order to launch their own dropshipping business. So it's kind of like a personal mentorship, in a sense. I only work with a small handful of people, kind of thing, any one time. My academy is my academy. It's pre-recorded video content teaching you how to build and launch and scale a business. Whereas the calls are really for me to discuss the possibility of working with people at a higher level, in a sense, to build a long-term e-commerce brand, but using the dropshipping model initially, to validate those products at low risk and then turn it into a stock and everything like that, fulfillment centers and all that kind of stuff, in terms of a sort of a long-term brand for the future.
Mm-hmm. And across both these operations, are there any standout examples of anything that really stuck out to you and said, wow, I made a huge difference in this. This is a great success now.
There's been a lot of successes in the academy. I think one of the most notable ones for me, just because of the speed of the results, was there was a guy called Shannon from Australia. He joined the academy, and then within 30 days of his store launching, he'd done $93,000 in sales within his first
3 days.
Within 30 days, sorry. Within
30 days,
of his store going live, he did $93,000, which was great to see, not just because I'd kind of helped somebody change their life in a way, but also that strategies can be transferred to such a high level quickly as well, kind of thing. So I think last time I spoke to him, he was up to $130,000 on his store or something like that. I'm not sure where he is now, but that's one that always stands out in my mind from all the success stories, kind of thing, just how quickly he saw those results once starting, so that was always a good one.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on, I just wanted to see if you'd be willing to tell us anything else about some of the format, or maybe some of the process that you go with speaking to people one-on-one.
Really, I mean, the initial calls that I have with people are really just about understanding what their goals are. Where are they now in terms of knowledge and experience? Do their goals align to what I can even offer? Because sometimes I get people on who want something that I can't help them with, So really those initial calls are just to make sure that, they have realistic goals for a start. I had somebody who said he wanted to make $1 million profit in a single day, which, I told him if he figures it out, let me know, kind of thing. So some people have unrealistic goals with it, but, I want to make sure that I'm working with people who, want to understand how to build an e-commerce business, really. And that is the mindset that they have. So that's what I'm looking for. This isn't a get-rich-quick kind of thing. It's not a scam. It's not a scheme. It's a business. And you have to understand, the techniques and the strategies in order to build it. But I need to make sure that I can help you understand that as well based on your goals sort of thing. So that's what those calls are for.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. So I checked out your dropshipping store, Big Red. I wanted to see an instance of one chugging along at full steam. In its current state, I'd like to know more about what's keeping it running. Like, who do you have in terms of personnel or software and services that are operating on the back end?
So Big Red was the store that really took off for me. That was the big one. That's what got the attention of Shopify and Oberlo. That was the first successful store I had. Since then, I've opened up multiple other dropshipping businesses. I've even launched a brand myself in April this year, which is the worst time to do it in the height of the coronavirus, but I did it anyway. So that's more of an e-commerce brand. So that's where my focus is now. So my focus isn't necessarily on Big Red anymore, mainly because that sort of general store format doesn't necessarily work as well anymore. You know, I'm very much down the kind of generic branded one product store kind of route to be able to build that kind of market leading proposition in the sense of brandability using the dropshipping model. So Big Red's still running because I can't bring myself to shut it down, but it's really collecting traffic organically now from Google, just for free in a sense. So it's making money each month for free. So it doesn't take a lot. I just manage it myself because it's not a brand that runs at a high level anymore because I've moved on to other businesses within, dropshipping and e-commerce in a sense. So that's the baby. That's the original one. I use it a lot for content within the academy to show, what you should do and what you shouldn't do now kind of thing. Because there are things on there that I do change now going forwards. But that was the first big success story within kind of my journey in dropshipping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I was interested in that just because I had a feeling that you moved on to other things. It's because I do know from researching you is that there's been a process to your development. You've had to go from operation to operation, idea to idea, which we'll get into a little bit. But I was wondering if it would turn into like its own Acme Industries where you have to have other people running it or anything like that. So have you had to hire people for anything that you're doing, or have you been able to just keep tabs on all of your work?
I have had to hire people, virtual assistants mainly, to help with stores, especially when they start to scale. Big Red, at its height when it was doing, tens of thousands of pounds a day, because I was running it in pounds at the time. So I obviously needed that support then, but now not so much. So they transition into other areas of my business that I need kind of thing. So I find it very difficult to delegate. It's one of my flaws. I find it very difficult to let go of control. I am working on it. It's taking time, but I'm getting there. But I think I'm very much hands-on in terms of how I run my business and it. And that's an issue I have to deal with to allow me to grow even further kind of thing. But it's, a Big Red, I just manage that myself because it ticks over each month on its own kind of thing. It's profitable every month just organically. But yeah, the other businesses are really the focus really in terms of the new e-commerce brand and things like that. That's where a lot of my VA work is held at the moment.
What was the one that you started up in April?
So that's my sort of e-commerce brand. I don't want to share it just yet.
Oh, sure.
They'll get swamped with traffic that won't be buying from me. But that was a brand new sort of e-commerce business, one product kind of brandable store that I've, want to get kind of like private labeled for the future and really try and grow it into a brand. Because my entire kind of dropshipping journey so far has very much been jumping on trends. And even though it's worked very well, trends don't last. And that's the problem. So now, I'm looking at really, using my knowledge and experience in the field to create an e-commerce business that can just run, every single day of the year for as long as possible kind of thing. So that's really the goal. Evergreen product, mass market appeal, problem solver, the standard kind of winning product criteria. I'm just, letting it run and, see where I can get with it.
It's funny that you say that trends, by their definition, they don't last forever. And it's something that I always find concerning, especially because going on to social media, a lot of the content that they encourage the users to create is also temporal by design. Like you go into Instagram stories and they last a day before they go on to the next thing. So there's always this sense of like missing out. So I guess there's a balance there between, well, if I'm going to be involved in this, I got to get in there knowing that it's not going to last forever, but staying out of it, I don't know if that's going to completely work either. My approach to trends has always been, I'll dip into the river, see if there is something that I want to grab, but then I keep it for life.
Yeah, it really depends what you're getting into this far, I suppose. Some people see it as a get-rich-quick thing, so they'll jump on a trend, you know, get the cash grab and then do a runner sort of thing. You know, that's not in a scammy way, just, you know, once it dies off, they'll finish kind of thing. They'll have a decent pot of money there to do with whatever they want. Other people do want to legitimately build a long-term e-commerce business to quit the job or, you know, retire earlier or whatever. You know, and obviously your product choice really is important with that. If you think back to the fidget spinners, you know, if you were dropped into the fidget spinners when they came around, you would have made a fortune. So I think an absolute fortune. But if you know, I remember hearing a story where some guy bought like $40,000 worth of fidget spinners just after the trend stopped. And you think he was stuck with $38,000 worth of fidget spinners that he couldn't get rid of because no one wanted them anymore, sort of thing. So it's very much kind of a case of what you're in it for. If you look now with masks, you know, before Facebook and Google started clamping down on people advertising face masks, everybody in the world pretty much needs a face mask, you know. So the people who cashed in on that at the beginning made a lot of money before
Facebook. Yeah, I mean, I still scroll Facebook because I have so many habits that I could stand to iron out, and I do still see some mask advertisements. This was something that we were actually talking about in a mentoring session last week. I think it was if it's a COVID-19 related advertisement. That's where Facebook's layeth down the hammer because they don't want it's a sensitive issue, right? People have experienced loss with it, so I understand. But I have noticed that people are going back to advertising masks in as if there was no COVID-19. Like, oh yeah, no, this is a breathable mask, something to wear when you go jogging. So people have found ways to get around it. So I wouldn't be surprised if eventually Facebook just says, okay, that's it. No more masks. No one's selling masks anymore. Enough is enough. Because people know, oh, I see a mask advertisement. Gee, I wonder what what problem they're solving.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, they definitely clamped down on it a lot. People were putting dots and dashes between the word mask and things so the bot couldn't find it and all sorts of little tricks. So it wouldn't surprise me if people have found loopholes to, you know, get their ads running. But yeah, it really depends what you're in this for. You know, now, originally I was in it for trends. I was in it for the cash grab. You know, as my experience has sort of grown and I've understood what this is a lot more kind of thing, you know, now I'm focusing more long-term to see if I can stop hunting products as much as I have been kind of thing, actually just settle on one and just run that, you know, as high a scale as I possibly can.
Mm-hmm. So I want to get into some of your research. So I know that research is a major key to your success. You engulfed yourself in knowledge at the beginning of your journey. And you mentioned earlier that you had even seen the seeds or the foundations of dropshipping 12 years ago. And I also understand that you haven't exactly stopped researching. So now that you're this far into the game, what does research look like for you in your position?
A lot of it really comes down to, in terms of product research, it really comes down to kind of trends in terms of search terms on Google, you know, because what I found is, you know, my advertising strategies have evolved slightly over time in terms of techniques, but I'm still running the same kind of strategies I did when I first launched Big Red in a way. So what I've acted as hundreds of products. Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of products, but the strategies have stayed pretty much the same. So that would suggest to me that product is very, very important. Yeah, because my marketing strategies, my website designs have all been roughly the same. They've improved over time, but it's the product that has been the main variable. And there's been times where I could spend hundreds and hundreds of pounds on advertising and get nothing for it because nobody really wanted the product. So my research now is very much around finding products that people want. Where is the demand for the products? Because you don't even have to be that good at advertising in order to make sales if people really, really want that product. Masks, for example. You know, a lot of people have made hundreds of thousands of dollars off masks originally when they've probably been trying dropshipping for months and months and not made a single dollar kind of thing. So it doesn't take a lot if you have the right product, but finding that product is really the key. And I think this is something I try and get a lot across to my students and to the clients within the mentorship is, you know, this product is very, very important. You know, this is the thing people are going to be buying. You need to understand how to connect with the audience, with your customer in order to sell it. So doing the research on is there demand for the product and what do people want it for is pretty much the foundation to my initial product research.
So I noticed, because I do some solo content as well. So it gives me an opportunity to do a lot of research for the company. So the top selling products I had seen, it was in the period of March. It was masks weren't on it, I guess, because it was so high up that it just shot right past the screen. Then it was disposable gloves, which makes sense. And then after that, it was bread makers was the next highest selling product that they had on the chart.
That could have been because no one could buy anything in the shops.
Yeah.
It was panic buying, wasn't there? So people were looking at making bread at home, maybe. But that would be, again, something I would class as a trending product, because once supermarkets got back to normal and there's bread on the shelves again, people didn't really need it. Like, think of the home gym equipment. That's another product that absolutely blew up during lockdowns for people working out from home. Those elastic bands, those gym bands. So many people tried to sell them and that blew up. But as soon as the gyms opened, no one needs them anymore. So no one's buying them anymore, kind of thing, especially here in the UK sort of thing. So, yeah, I think they could be seen as evergreen products, but the trend, the spike was now because of COVID. So it's taken into the variables in terms of what's going on in the world as part of your product research as well.
Yeah, I would expect to see some overall shift in people's mindset, because I think being under a unprecedented historical lockdown, It's giving people an opportunity to experience living life a little bit differently, maybe out of their usual habits. So this is just speculating, but you might expect more people to say, you know what, working out from home is actually fine. I guess I didn't really need to go to the gym. So I can see like a little bit of a shift in terms of what people are actually going to start using their homes for. I mean, I was social distancing way before I had to. I was working remote as far back as 2019. So everybody else is like, stay in your homes. And my order might as well been, you know what, just do what Joseph is doing. So I want to give you a chance to be as granular as you feel you can. Maybe you don't want to give away everything, which is totally understandable. But let's just hypothetically say you're doing some research and you're trying to nail down what might be in your shoes. You're looking for something that has lasting power. So what, after this interview, you're going to go do some research. What does that look like?
Yeah, so I think I have a certain sort of list of what I class as winning product criteria. So I have a checklist of criteria that I validate all my products against. So what I would do generally is, if I would have a product list that I'm thinking of potentially sort of selling, I would create the list and I would then validate that list against the criteria. So certain things on the criteria are things like mass market appeal, make sure that it is sellable to a huge audience. You know, that's why a lot of people get into pet niches when they first start dropshipping, because it's a very simple mass market kind of product. Not a lot of people get into sewing niches because, the market isn't that big. I mean, it's relatively big, but in comparison, it's not. So I look for products that kind of have a mass market appeal, ones that solve a problem, because problem-solving products are products that people need more than want. And I think need is very important than want, especially in the current climate when people are scared about, jobs as well. Need it to improve their life? So solving a problem that makes a product, improve the customer's life is important for me. It needs to have some sort of like unique appeal or a unique selling point, in the sense that you can focus on. So like a wow factor, in a way, why should they buy it from you rather than go to the corner store or Amazon or something like that? What's different about your product? What makes it unique? Those are really the top three. I have things like another important one, I suppose, is the demand from Google Trends. Typing in product search terms that people will be searching for, what is the demand on it? Compare it to other products, and see what the differences of them are. Is it seasonal? Like snow goggles, I was selling snow goggles on Big Red when I first launched it. And, that did, I think it took close to £100,000 in 4 months. It did. But if I tried to sell that, I was obviously over the winter period, but if I tried to sell that over the summer period, I wouldn't have made anything. So, trends are very important in terms of when you sell a product. And that's why, evergreen products are important. So mass market appeal, problem solving, wow factor, and that it's actually trended in terms of search terms. So as people are actually searching for it, there's demand for it. Those are really the top four. And then after that, it's things like, can you price it? three, you know, with a decent margin. Because obviously, if you're paying for Facebook ads and, you know, Google ads, you're going to have a cost in there as well as your product cost. So you need a decent margin. So I always try and price something sort of three times what I'm buying it for, including the shipping. Mm-hmm. As a minimum. So I think, so you wouldn't buy something for a dollar and it's like $3 kind of thing. But, you know, you'd have to sell a decent margin. But, you know, a 3x kind of price point on it is something I definitely look at. There are a few more, but those are kind of like the main ones that I look at in order to really validate products. And then I pick the one that I think's got the most potential.
Mm-hmm. You know, it just reminds me when I was talking to one of my managers. This was like at an old watch job, and he said the markup on it was two times. So he had to buy something at cost, and then he only marked it up. I guess it was like if he bought it at 150, his markup would be 300. And it's really like mind-blowing, because that profit margin was everything. It was overhead. It was paying us, the staff. It was purchasing more products. And by goodness, those products needed to sell. You know, we didn't want to stock the store with stuff that wasn't selling. So the difference between that versus a three times margin with significantly less overhead, you know, you don't have to subscribe to a radio station to play on the speaker for people to walk in. So it just it really is a whole change in people being able to put their energy into something and getting something out of it.
It is the barrier for entry on dropshipping is so low. It is untrue. You know, your biggest cost really is your advertising cost. And you could even run this without advertising. If you wanted to take it slower and cheaper, you just, you know, create organic posts on, you know, Instagram or Facebook and get just organic traffic coming back to your store through your branded kind of Instagram page. You know, yes, it'll take a lot longer to get to any kind of, you know, tangible result, but it's free. So, you know, really all you're then paying for is your Shopify subscription and any kind of apps you have, you know, because your product cost is technically free because the customer pays for it before you have to buy it. And your apps, you know, a lot of the apps end up paying for themselves, especially when it comes to retargeting and things like that. So that's technically free. And that's what Shopify is in a sense, because without Shopify, you wouldn't be getting the sales. So, you know, it all kind of pays for itself. And your biggest cost, your only cost really is your ad cost, your cold traffic ad cost. And if you're not doing that, then the barrier to entry to running your own business online is so low. And that's why so many people are so attracted to it, because it's very, very easy to do from a laptop without any pants on your sofa kind of thing. That's kind of how it is. So, it's a really good business model.
Yeah. How much would you say in your budget does advertising factor in?
It's a big piece of it in a sense, but sure. I'm still quite tight with spending money on ads kind of thing. So I won't go in there and start spending £1,000 a day on ads. Like I'll go in there and I'll spend, you know, 20, 30, 50 pounds a day on ads, and I'll test them at first. Once I start seeing, you know, traction on a product, once I start seeing profit, start trimming off the fat, you know, kill the ad sets that aren't working and start to scale the ones that are. And eventually you get a point where you have a bunch of ad sets that are profitable on a daily basis and hardly any that aren't. And all you have to do then is just increase that budget. And I think a big mistake people make with Facebook ads is they think spending more means they're going to make more. And it doesn't work like that. You know, you're spending more only means you're going to reach more people. You're going to get more data, reach more people, whether that's positively or negatively on your bottom line. You know, Facebook don't care. They're just putting your ad out to more people. So starting with a low budget, even as little as like, you know, $5 a day kind of thing can be enough. Once you make sale and you make profit, you scale it kind of thing. That's what I did with my first store that took off. I spent £5 on the very first day and it didn't make a sale, and I lost a fiver, and I was like, I can't afford to do this. What's going on? And then the second day, it made a sale. So I was in a profit, not by a lot, but I was in profit. And I remember running around the front room celebrating. I was like, I'm going to be rich. Cause I'd made a sale kind of thing. And then before I know it, I was at $700,000 on that store kind of thing. So it just gradually increases. You don't need a massive budget to get started. You just got to be careful with it if your budget is low.
Mm-hmm. And legends speak of when you got your first profit that you might have done a lap around your room. Was that you, or was that somebody else?
Yeah. That was you? Okay. I think a lot of people do that. The first sale dance, I think it's called now. You do the first sale dance and you do a little jig in your front room and or wherever you are. And yeah, you never forget that first sale because it proves it. It proves you can do it. Now it's just about optimizing and scaling at that point.
Yeah, I as they're teaching me how to do this too, I'm certain that at some point I'll have my own variation of that jig. This is completely off topic. Like a friend of mine, he's a Twitch streamer, and we hadn't talked for a year, and then he gets back into World of Warcraft, and I figure out what server he's on and what faction he's fighting for. So I make a character on the opposite faction specifically to try to kill him. And when I realized I could do this, I did this, I'm going to kill him jig. And I was ecstatic. I was so excited to do it. So I think I can picture that level of excitement, but through a completely different person. So it's great that you brought me to the next question that I wanted to ask was, as your dropshipping business was taking off, you were in just these major financial milestones, right? Like it's 200 pounds overnight, then it's 1,000 pounds profit in a day, 2,000 pounds in profit, and so on. So with your with the research you had done, and I guess also with your own instincts, what were you doing to keep yourself grounded, but then also to make sure that you are capitalizing on this transition from, well, you know, less to more?
Yeah, I think, I'm not very flashy. I'm not one of the, you see them all over Instagram stuff, flashing Rolex watches and flashy cars and flashy holidays and stuff. I'm just naturally not a flashy person. The reason I started doing this was for freedom. Freedom was my ultimate goal, not material goods kind of thing. So what I have done to keep myself grounded in a sense is I still live in the same house I did when I was broke. I still drive a 1-liter Volkswagen Polo because as I did when I was broke kind of thing. So I haven't bought anything extravagant. What I have done is I've improved my standard of living massively to the point where I'm free to do whatever I want, whenever I want kind of thing. I'm investing, I'm looking at the future, I'm putting that money in, you know, sort of index funds to grow just, you know, gradually over time. I'd rather spend my money on making my money earn more money than spending it on a fancy car. I might get a fancy car one day, but I work from home, so where am I going to go? Especially in a lockdown sort of thing. So, and then to keep myself grounded is I haven't changed. You know, you wouldn't, if you looked at me, you wouldn't know I've done what I've done kind of thing. So yeah, you won't see me in any Gucci t-shirts or anything like that. I don't, it's not for me. So that's kind of how I stay grounded with it. It's all about freedom and future for me. And that's my goal.
You know, there's there's two terms there, and the relationship between them is something that I've thought about in the past, but I didn't really make a connection until now. But when somebody's, the difference between somebody spending versus somebody investing. Like when I hear the word spending, I think money for obviously for something, but it's not like that whatever it is I'm spending money on is necessarily going to create more gains in the future. Investing is the opposite. Investing is I'm spending this money. Okay, that's not exactly how I wanted to characterize it, but I am transacting this money in the mindset that it is going to increase my gains over time. And that's something that I've always like tried to angle myself more towards, not just with money, but also with time too. Like if I'm going to see a movie, if I'm going to hang out with friends, I like to see how I can treat that as an investment. Like, you know, seeing a movie that changes my viewpoint on something or being with my friends to create a better bond so that we become better friends. So I think if people get into the mindset more of investing over spending, I think that would help them quite a bit in understanding that this is value that can become more valuable if you know what you're doing.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I'm not just talking about investing in like stocks and shares as well, though I invest in myself in terms of knowledge as well. So, you know, like I want to grow businesses. I'm not focused solely on dropshipping kind of thing. I want to have multiple income streams from multiple industries because you never know what's going to happen. So I'm in the process of building an entirely new business as well to coincide with what I already have, you know, because I don't, you know, if something happens, if some sort of policy comes in place and says dropshipping's illegal, you know, I'm kind of screwed in a way. So I need other avenues as well. So I'm investing in myself in order to grow my knowledge as well. So I'd much rather spend my money on knowledge and my future than spend it on a car and a house and a fancy holiday kind of thing. that's just me. You know, everyone's different, aren't they? So, mm-hmm.
I do want to mention that you did have a dream trip. There was something that you had wanted to do for a long time, and not that I'm and I couldn't characterize this as I'm not trying to call you out. I'm trying to get as far away from that as possible, but there was a trip you really wanted to take, and so there was a difference between some like a lavish, luxurious trip just for the sake of it, going to one of those underwater hotels in Dubai. But for you, you did something that was really special to you, and that was you wanted to go on a drive through the USA. So I'm wondering why. I mean, there's a lot of places you can go in Japan. Like on my list, US is there, Japan, Italy, New Zealand, lots of places that I'd love to go. And I think I know why the U.S. was a big draw for you, because the United States is one of the most free places on earth. And because you were motivated to gain your freedom, I think there was a connection between those two points. But tell me about your U.S. trip and why it was so important to you.
I've always had a fascination with the U.S. I don't know why, probably. You know,
who doesn't?
I think it could be, you know, movies, you know, TV shows that you watch, and you're always seeing these famous places and landmarks and things like that. The idea of, you know, going coast to coast on a road trip and just seeing all these places, you know, just the environments and everything, which is something that I've always dreamt of doing. It was always, it's just always been a dream of mine to do, and I've never been able to afford it. It's always been, you know, a lot of money to me kind of thing. But, you know, like you're saying with the lavish holidays, like you won't see me kind of going on lavish trips to Dubai and like, you know, fancy like tower skyscrapers and having, you know, $10,000 bottles of champagne and things like that. It's, you know, it's not really me. But jumping in a van with seven other people and camping at multiple spots along, you know, from, you know, east to west kind of thing, New York to LA, was just the best thing I've ever done. And unfortunately, with the whole COVID thing, I did it with Trek America. But Trek America have actually shut down now because of the COVID, after almost 40 years of running. So it's quite sad, really, because I was planning on going on another. Because I did basically the South Coast. So I went like New York, Philly, Washington, down to like New Orleans, and went across the Gulf of Mexico, and then came back up through like Texas, and, you know, went through Zion and Monument Valley and Vegas, LA, kind of thing. Did that whole route. But I kind of went to do the North. You know, go up top, go back the other way from LA to New York, but through the North route. But yeah, it was always a dream. And yeah, I did it. Luckily, I managed to get the chance to do it before they shut down.
Also, I just want to say for my own sake, because that I would love to try out one of those underwater hotels in Dubai. Yeah, I don't know about the champagne, but I am a bit of like a hotel fan. It's just something about staying in a place. It's almost like being in a dream for me. It's because I can walk around. Everything is taken care of. I don't have to, like, you know, wash or do anything. I just I exist for a few days. It's very zen, but that's just me. So some of the other backstory stuff that I wanted to ask about, and there's a through line through the people that I've talked to, is that how so far nobody that I've talked to has been greedy. Really, no one has. Everybody has had some difficulties in their life, and really through perseverance and through the initiative to take this opportunity, where you guys able to, you know, find yourself in a better place. Particularly, and this is because I have like a my own experience with a call center. You had done a call center job for a while, and I want to ask you about what was going through your mind and like what effect it had on you. And before I do, I just want to tell you real quick what my call center experience was like. It was on the verge of being great, but there was just one or two things that made it go from being an amazing job that I really would have enjoyed to an absolute nightmare. And it was a call center job. I was doing outgoing calls, and I had to conduct surveys for people. So I would ask them 15 questions about their experience with a phone company. And I would have enjoyed this because, you know, I do like talking to people. I've got the talker's voice. But the problem was I had to stick to the script. Like, word for word. I couldn't deviate. I couldn't converse. And then there was monitoring. They would actually have transcripts of our calls for free feedback. and my goodness, if I had any opinion on it myself. And it just made me think, man, you know, if I could just have that job where I'm just like conversing with people, I ask the questions and, you know, we're just, you know, two people chatting. I feel like that would have been, it might even yielded better results, but you know, they have their reasons for doing it their way, and you know, they're probably still in business now, so I respect that. But so let me throw it back to you. What was going through your mind when you were in your office job or your call center job?
The whole reason I got that job originally in the call center was because my mom told me to get out of bed and get a job when I was 19. Kind of, she just kicked me out of bed and said, "Go get a job." That was the whole reason. So it was never, I think a lot of people get into call center was just to get a job. You know, I don't think anybody. Yeah. Anybody's dream is, you know, when they're a kid is to, you know, work in a call center. It's a stepping stone to something else. Luckily, when I was in there, you know, I worked and I built my way up into a kind of a senior management role within the company. So I wasn't on the phone when I finally kind of left the business. But throughout that time I was there, I always felt like I wanted more. The thought of being stuck in the office or a office for the next 40 years until I retired just did not sit right with me whatsoever. And I knew the only way for me to break free of that was to do something about it. And I was broke. I was dirt broke. I was living in a house. I had a mortgage on my own because I was going through a breakup kind of thing. So the whole sob story was there. And I needed to do something. So I started to do something about it. I never expected it to get to where it is. Like I said, my original goal was to earn £200 a month just to kind of, you know, help me pay my bills. But I always hoped that something would happen. I always hoped that I would be able to kind of get out of that corporate world and actually just be a bit more dynamic in my job, in a sense, a bit more free. And like I said, my goal really now is that freedom. Now that I've had that taste of it, I would never want to go back to a job. And this is why I'm working as hard as I do to try and not only grow the dropshipping side of the business, but also, you know, have these other avenues coming in, like my new business I'm looking at, and also, you know, real estate and investing, which is, you know, pretty typical for people kind of thing when they're looking to expand income streams. So that's what I'm doing as well. So, yeah, really, there's something deep down that told me that this isn't right, and I do not want to be in a job until I retire kind of thing. So that's what I was feeling at that time.
Yeah, that sounds on par with a lot of what I went through, and it wasn't just that job either. It was other ones too. But you know, I'm, you know, for what it's worth, to my fine people at Debutify, I it took me a while to get to a job like this, but it does feel like a dream because mm-hmm. it's a balance between freedom and responsibility. You know, I have a. Aside from having to be on time for interviews, everything else that I do, I get to go at my own pace. And you know, for people, it takes time, but there really is no motivation quite like getting your freedom and being able to decide what you want to do on your own day. And I'm also finding too that rather than have this job force me to be disciplined, like working at a job where I have to be somewhere at this time every day in a row, 5 days in, you know, like 5 days a week, I'm in charge of my own discipline. So even when I'm making rules for myself and I'm scheduling myself out, I still feel like I have the choice of how I want to do this. Like I'm getting up at 8 o'clock a.m. on my own volition, as opposed to having a job make me do it.
Yeah, definitely. It's that was the biggest worry I felt I would have, you know, once I did decide to quit the job, was would I be disciplined enough in order to work without that boss telling you, you know, without the fear of getting sacked, in a sense, if you didn't show up for work one day. What was if I just wanted a day off kind of thing? But what I found is I actually end up working more now because I have that flexibility of time. You know, I could be on at 2 o'clock in the morning, or I could be on at 9 o'clock in the morning, I could be on at 2 in the afternoon kind of thing. It really depends on when I want to jump online. There's nobody telling me what to do. I can just go and do it whenever I feel most productive, in a sense, being more scheduled with it. But I've definitely come to rely on my calendar a lot more with booking times in. So that's something new. But yeah, and that discipline, it's right. You're right what you're saying. You know, discipline, it's amazing what it does when no one's telling you what to do, when you know you still do it, in a sense. I think with having your own business as well, it's your responsibility. You know, it's kind of, you don't want it to fail. So you are, I feel like I'm more passionate about this than I was working for somebody else. Because it's mine. This is mine. I've built this. So it has to work. And, you know, I don't want people to see me as a failure. So I'm not going to stop, kind of thing. So that's kind of how it is.
Yeah, I know. I feel you on that. I was able to you know, tell my parents what job that I'm having now. And I think they trust me now, and they trust my judgment. But it can be hard for other people too, because they are looking out for our best interest. But you know, at the end of the day, that resistance is what we need for the motivation. Because if everything is just easy and simple, then it's just not as motivating.
Definitely, I think there's a lot of I think everybody kind of says this when they start doing something themselves. A lot of people tell you you're not going to be able to do it, or it's not going to work. Go get a normal job. Kind of thing. I think those no's, those naysayers, I think people call them, is what really pushed me to prove them wrong. Mm-hmm. A lot of people called me Del Boy. I don't know if you know the reference in terms of Only Fools and Horses. It was like a really popular comedy show in the UK, like a classic kind of comedy show. There's a guy called Del Boy who always said he was going to be a millionaire, kind of thing. And he was always this sort of like trying to sell things on the sly and stuff, you know, Del Boy is a term in the UK now where it refers to that kind of thing, where you're trying to make money, the side hustler, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And he eventually did it kind of thing. So a lot of people, when I was trying to build this, kept calling me Del Boy, like jokingly saying it's not going to work, you're just a Del Boy kind of thing. So it's quite nice to know that it's actually worked out. But those people who said it wasn't going to work forced me to make it work, to prove them wrong. I wasn't going to let them be right. I think a lot of people have that same kind of mentality with it.
They have their role to play, you know, and in a way it's like it's their job to provide that impetus to get ahead. Mm-hmm. So people are going to they could be in a similar situation to you. Things could be rather rough. And one thing that stuck out to me is that your store Big Red was attempt number 6. So you had 5 attempts before then. Mm-hmm. I would like to zero in on that just a little bit, because I want to know some of like your mindset, as well as whatever lessons you were able to learn on attempt number 2 that you're able to carry over into attempt number 3. And I think this would be really helpful for people who are trying to get it to work and it's not quite clicking, only for it to then click. So tell us a little bit more about that story.
So Big Red was probably launched probably just over three years ago now. That was the 6th attempt. The first 5 attempts were done over the previous 3 years. So I've been trying to do dropshipping for 6 years, kind of just over 6 years. So the first 5 failed store attempts were over like a 3-year period on and off.
I see.
So, you know, the first time I launched it was, I obviously didn't have a clue what I was doing. I thought it was a get rich quick scheme. I fire up a store, I'm going to make $1 million. I was one of those people. That's what I thought. You know, that was the impression I got. Quickly realized it wasn't going to work that way. So I tried a few more, I tried different niches. I tried the standard typical pet store. I tried a snowboarding store, even though I knew nothing about snowboarding kind of thing. And they all just failed because I didn't know what I was doing in terms of branding. I didn't know what I was doing in terms of marketing and Facebook ads and any of that. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And after the 5th store, I almost gave up. I was like on the edge of giving up. And I decided just to basically sit down and do as much research as I possibly could to figure it out from all the free resources that were about, because I couldn't pay for somebody. I couldn't, you know, afford a course, or if there was any courses that I didn't even bother looking because I didn't have the money to do it in the first place kind of thing. So I did as much as I could. And I said to myself, okay, this is going to be the last attempt. This will be the last attempt. If this doesn't work on this 6th store, then this isn't for me. I'll have to find something else. And when I launched that 6th store, I had £250 as my budget. And I think I spent about £150 of it before I found the product that, you know, eventually kicked everything off. And I had £100, and I thought, right, I'm just going to go all in on this. £100 on this product. I'm going to make a bunch of ad sets and just spend the entire £100 in one day and see what happens. And if this doesn't do it, that's my budget. I'm fed up. I can't do this anymore. It's not for me kind of thing. And I launched the product, and it was profitable from that day kind of thing. So that was... Yeah, that's the one that really took off. Now, I had made sales on the other stores, bear in mind, but
sure, okay,
none of it was profitable kind of thing. So this one was profitable. But yeah, that's what really kind of took it off. So there was always something in the back of my mind saying, you can do this, you know, you can do this. It's funny because I've actually been reading that Think Rich, Grow Rich book. It's quite a popular book, and it's interesting what they're seeing now, how usually people that find success are the people that are just about to stop. And mm-hmm. it's the people that, you know, don't stop that end up you know, finding that success. It's very much like the university's little trick to say, if you can break past this barrier, you will find success. But people normally stop at that point where I was about to stop. So it's quite interesting reading that and, you know, thinking, oh yeah, that's kind of, you know, what happened to me as well. So I think, don't give up. You can only fail if you give up. I think that's my number one tip.
Yeah, it does make me wonder, like in an alternate universe, if say like Big Red didn't take off, I wonder if you, like, would you actually have just gone back to your office job? Would you have tried to go into a different field altogether? Or was it really maybe just like a psychological technique to say, okay, number six, I know I said that was the last time, but number seventh, this is going to be the last time.
That's a difficult question to answer. I don't know. I think dropshipping and e-commerce isn't the only money-making thing I've tried. You know, dropshipping e-commerce is the last money-making thing I've tried because it works. But I've tried all sorts of stuff. You know, I've tried, you know, selling things on eBay. I've tried, you know, gambling, like roulette and things like that. I've tried, I even tried renting my driveway. Right on the front of my house. I live on a typical suburban street. You can park on the road kind of thing. So there's no point anybody parking on my driveway. But that just shows you kind of all the things I was trying to do to make money at the time. And, you know, e-commerce was just another one of these long list of get rich quick ideas. That's why everyone called me Dellboy, because I was trying all these different money making ideas to try and do something to help me break out of this corporate world when I came across dropshipping because of that YouTube video, One Fateful Night kind of thing. And that just, you know, snowballed into what it ended up being. So, yeah, it's been an interesting ride, really.
Mm-hmm. Makes me wonder, like, if they were to try to remake that TV show now, whereas before he would be going off in all these adventures. I haven't seen it. But I just assume that he's in different parts of the country. Maybe he's in like a gold mine for an episode, which is a complete guess. Versus now, people doing these attempts, it's just them on their computer for hours and hours, you know, trying different things. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, shows are made and made to reflect the time that they're made in, for sure.
Wow.
So I've got a couple more questions for you, and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
From what I read, is that you are open to criticism. Mm-hmm. You face it head on, which is a great and admirable quality. But I would like to know if was there any criticism that stuck out to you and how you responded to it.
Yeah, I think the biggest criticism that I generally get these days, which apparently is quite common once you start becoming more successful, especially with me being on YouTube and things like that, you know, people see me a lot, you get a lot of hate thrown your way. A lot of it's mindset, a lot of it's jealousy kind of thing. But the one thing that does bother me, I suppose, is when people call me a scammer for what I do. They completely just paint me that picture of being a scammer. Without doing any research and stuff like that. Now, I'm trying to teach people, you know, how to build a business at the end of the day. Do you know, it's, but I think there are scammers out there, but to be painted by that same brush without anyone doing any research is annoying, to say the least, kind of thing. But I think now, at the time it bothered me. Originally it did bother me. I think it would bother a lot of people. But over time, it's just, I realize now it's completely just mindset from people, small-minded sort of mindsets, in a sense. And I think the people who call people scammers and, you know, give negative reviews and things like that are the people who generally don't become successful anyway. Because I think you have to be positive. You have to, you know, push through challenges. And I think, you know, if you have that victim mindset, you're never going to make it a success. Like, I never felt like I was a failure, even though I was failing. You know, it's always very much, I felt like I could win. I just had to figure out how to win. That was kind of my mindset. So, you know, when people, you know, call me a scammer or a fraud or whatever, I'm like, one, how can you say that when there's all this stuff about me everywhere kind of thing? That obviously backs up what I'm saying, but also it's a business at the end of the day. You know, you have to have the right mindset to make it work, and not everybody will make it work because not everybody has the right mindset. So, yeah, that kind of stuff bothers me. But now it's just one of those things, and you just deal with it kind of thing. I always think about, you know, how big celebrities deal with how much hate they get. It's totally... You know, it's a totally different sort of ball game, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And again, they're just playing their role as well. Yeah. You know, they're continuing that necessary element of push. Well, I don't know about, okay, maybe not necessary in the granular sense, but there's always that element of pushback. It's just part of how the universe works.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people deal with it. You can see it a lot, especially on social media, you know, keyboard warriors. It's easier to say it behind a keyboard with anonymity instead of saying it in front of someone's face, isn't it, kind of thing. So
it is.
But yeah, one of those things, you got to deal with it. If you want to be successful, if you want to grow, if you want to kind of be in the public eye, in a sense, you know, through YouTube, then you've got to deal with anything that comes your way, positive or negative, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate that answer. That was very sincere. Last thing to, and then we can get you going, is for people who are ready to engage. If you were to set up a new dropshipping based store, can you take us through some of what you do to initialize it? I know you did mention some of your studying, your criteria.
Yeah.
So we can review that very quickly, but if there's anything else you want to recommend to people getting started, this would be the time to do it.
I think for a lot of people who are just getting started in dropshipping, is to pick your product and not your niche. A lot of people come into the, I'm going to make a pet store. Well, that's all well and good, but what happens if nobody wants any of your pet products? So, you know, this is where the data validation comes in. You know, what if you find a bunch of pet products and none of them hit the criteria, none of them have search terms for them? Well, you know, you're going to have a lot of competition in the pet niche. But what happens if you found something, I don't know, in car mechanical niche or whatever, I'm just making something up now, kind of thing, it was some fancy screwdriver that ticked all the boxes that were going to make you $1 million, would you do the car mechanical thing, or would you go down the pet niche because you wanted to do a pet niche? To me, I'm in it to make profit. So choosing the product over the niche is one of the most important steps that I think people should do before you even decide to open a store. Figure out what your product is. Find that product using the validation techniques. Find it using the, you know, there's so many free tools available. Like Google Trends is totally free, but it's a massive piece of my research, kind of thing. So, you know, use that, figure out products that people want, and then start to consider how you want to build your brand around it. You know, how can you make yourself look like the market leader in that product? You know, think about branding in terms of having one, like I said, I go for one product stores now. So that would be the only product. Become that one product. You know, a great brand that I look at is a company called BlendJet. They used to be dropshippers, and now they have their own e-commerce brand from that one product, kind of thing. So, think about the brand, how you can really build a business around that product, and then that's when you start to build your store. Think about what the customer wants. How do they connect with that customer, with that product? You know, what do they want it for? What's the benefit to them? Not what you think they want. What do they want? Kind of thing. And, you know, start thinking about it. It all comes together really to create that entire website, that brand, that messaging, and then you align that with your ads, and hopefully it all works.
Mm-hmm. Well, I it certainly has, and I'm certain it certainly can again. And then for if anybody wants to engage with you, how do you recommend people come reach out to you?
You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Just search Chris Wayne, Wane, and then I should just pop up on there for you. And yeah, you can send me a message through any of those channels, and I get back to everybody myself. I have no VAs answering those messages; it's just me. So, any questions or anything, just reach out, and yeah, you'll speak directly with me.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been a great interview.
It's been great. Great speaking to you.
You might have found this show on any number of platforms. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, or right here on Debutify. Whatever the case, if you enjoyed this content and want to help us thrive, please take a few moments to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you think is best. We also want to hear from you, so whether you think you'd be a good guest or want to weigh in on anything related to our show, you can email podcast@debutify.com or connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Finally, this podcast is created by the passionate team at Debutify. If you're ready to take the plunge into e-commerce or are looking to up your game, head over to debutify.com and see how it can change your life and the lives of many through what you do next.